CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Venice Solutions. Finance departments can have varying structures, different teams within a finance team. There's not a one-size-fits-all. But very commonly, there are two teams that need to work together effectively within the finance function to help drive value for the organization. That is the accounting team and the financial planning and analysis team. They are key collaborators, but getting synergies between these two teams can sometimes be a little more nuanced than one would expect at first glance. We are very fortunate to have two guests joining me today to discuss this topic who have a lot of experience with these teams. With me, I have David Cornfield, VP Finance and Planning at World Wildlife Fund Canada, and Tom Siegmiller, CFO of Texada Software. David and Tom, thank you so much for joining me.
Melissa, thanks so much for having us. And David, great to be here with you today.
Thank you.
I think for somebody who's not in the finance world, it would be easy to paint the team with a broad brush and assume that all finance roles are equal and everyone's doing the same thing. But really, it's a lot more nuanced than that. Can you maybe share what some of your experiences have been with this, especially with regards to accounting and FP&A?
When somebody says accountant, I think non-financial people have this image of what an accountant is. And the truth is, everybody has a specialized role, right? You know, you have your accounts payable, your accounts receivable, you got your financial reporting. Accountants come in all different flavors. It could be taxes or whatever. It is specialized role. And each person has their own unique role within their area.
Yeah. And so when I think about it, I think about two camps. And so when I think about accounting, I often think about closing out the books and reporting on the past. When I think of FP&A, I think of forecasting and future-looking projections and business partnering. And so I think some of the nuance maybe that you were alluding to at the beginning was the need to get those teams ultimately to work together. And we can dig into this a little bit further, but I think often, like many, many different parts of the organization, things can happen in silos. You can have this pocket happening over here that's closing out the books and reporting on the past, and this pocket that's over here trying to predict the future and forecast the future. And it's about how do you form those bonds that bind the two of them together to ultimately drive to a better outcome.
Absolutely. And David, you've had great experience. You were a controller, and then you've progressed taking on responsibilities for planning and analysis, and now you oversee all of it. And so maybe you can share what your experience has been like, you know, progressing through those roles.
Well, let me first start with a funny story. When I first joined WWF Canada, it was bank recs hadn't been done in 6 months. The investment journal entries hadn't been done for a year. The balance sheet did not balance and nobody trusted the reporting. And oh, by the way, the auditors are coming in 2 weeks, right? It was just like crisis management, right? And so you had to really focus and prioritize and get through that process. And so for me as a controller, it really is building that foundational base. Get the foundational things that you need to get done and get it done right. As time progresses, then you start into the financial reporting, right? And making sure people are getting what they want and they need in other areas of the organization so they can be effective. And then in my role, my current role, it really is about strategic planning, looking forward. And also, there's a lot of cross-functional planning. It's like we were talking about silos, right? Not just within accounting versus financial planning, but also the other departments and functional areas within your organization. There can be silos. So in my role, it really is that cross-functional planning, where you get, in my case, conservation programming with the communications department and making sure the messaging is what they want it to be, that sort of thing. And that's a unique role. I'm not doing the planning for them, but I'm making sure that they're planning together, right? And as Tom had said, it really is looking into the future And part of that strategic planning, making the right decisions about what is priority and focus on those priority areas.
Yeah, that you touch on that alignment, which is, it's a role we're constantly playing both outside of our department, but also need to make sure we're minding that within our department to make sure the teams are getting aligned. Tom, your experience as well, a little bit different, but similar in that you started in financial planning and analysis. And then when you went, I think, to MyoVision, you took on broader FP&A accounting responsibilities. And again, now you're overseeing all of it. But what were some of your observations as you were moving between the roles?
Yeah, and so I'm going to start out by saying I maybe didn't have an appreciation for what somebody in accounting was facing. You know, David, you alluded to a balance sheet that didn't balance, or I just call it a sheet. You know, we'll call that an accounting joke. But I don't think I understood from an FP&A perspective maybe what somebody in a controllership role was facing on a day-to-day basis. And so through actively sitting in that role, taking accountability for a broader remit, it gave me a distinct appreciation for what somebody that was previously sitting on the other side of the table was experiencing day-to-day. And it could be a challenge as simple as balance sheet doesn't balance. Well, that's pretty earth-shattering. Like, how do we start to do our planning if the basics or the foundational items from a controllership or accounting perspective aren't in place? And so for me, it gave me an opportunity to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. I'm really, really big on seeking empathy and understanding for what somebody else is facing. And so for me, that was a bit of an aha moment to say, there's probably a whole bunch of missed opportunities that I hadn't seized previously in my career. And through overseeing both of those functions, finance functions at the same time, it was an opportunity to say, we got to connect a whole bunch more of these dots. There's got to be a better way for us to do this here.
Certainly credibility. If you want to be able to provide financial planning, you have to have credibility as well with the numbers. And those numbers come from the accounting department, right?
They most certainly do. That's the grounding. You're right. Can't start to look at the future if you don't understand the past.
And we sometimes see even friction that can start to develop between these two parts of the organization. What has been some of your experience? Maybe I'll start with you, David, about where some of the key parts of friction have come from?
Generally, it's around collection of data, right? So accounting has its perspective of what it needs, but financial planning and analysis, they need more. They need more data, but it's the accounting department that sort of collects that data, right? So it's like asking for more work. But it's also, there's a need for flexibility. So there's different views of data, right? Information, you can take different perspectives in your financial planning, your analysis, whereas accounting doesn't really always is flexible. It's like, we're doing it one way and that's the way we do it, right? As financial planning, well, what if you look at it from a different direction? Like when you're doing margin analysis, you want to look at it one way, or you might want to look at it a different way. And so one of the tensions is sort of like developing that flexibility with the data, whereas accounting may not always, we just want to get it done, right? You know, we got month end, we got to do it, right? We got to put in the transactions this way. Whereas financial planning analysis, they want more attributes, more tags or something like that, and have different views of the data.
Tom, what about you?
I think one of the things I've experienced is people can believe that their goals are incongruent in those two particular roles. And so, David, you talked about controllership just wants to close the books. Well, one of the mandates in controllership and accounting is get good assurance over the close, get comfortable with your numbers, and do so faster. What about if the teams actually collaborated? So you think about all of the insights an FP&A team has around the business, what they're expecting to spend money on, what we thought was going to occur in a particular period of time. Imagine all that information was shared really, really effectively with a controllership team or an accounting team. My mind immediately goes to, well, if we know what should occur within that period, then that means we have a greater likelihood of getting better assurance over the results. You have earlier insights as to what complete likely looks like if you have a good and solid forecast. It can be a bit of a self-serving prophecy that if these teams help each other, it actually elevates both of the functions at the same time. Likewise, with that margin analysis, like if we're sitting in a controllership role, if margins are looking off from an FP&A perspective because they're viewing things differently, it begs the question, have you captured all your transactions? Do you have it right? This is ultimately a source of truth for each other. And I don't think things should ever be viewed in isolation, but rather as a collaborative approach that through one side of the organization or one side of the function helping the other, the water rises for all through doing so in those activities.
And I'll add to that is like, if you have a knowledge of future transactions, like let's say significant or important transactions, when it comes to accounting, they don't have to think about it. They know what's expected, that this is for this purpose. And so they can, they don't have to go through and second guess what the transaction is. They know what it is because they see, they know the future transactions are coming down the road.
Or think about an environment where a company doesn't operate off POs for purchasing. If you have a forecast, it begs the question, gee, am I missing an accrual? You get your books closed and it's like, well, the forecast said, you know, we're going to spend $100,000 more in marketing. I'm not seeing it show up in the actuals. Are we missing an invoice? Are we missing an accrual? It can just like, it can sort of guide you to that inherent truth.
Yes, exactly.
You're both touching on such important pieces of the two teams needing to lean into each other's worlds a little more and understand. Like I think about the reports and you could perpetually ask for new data, but stopping to explain the why and understanding if do you really need something net new or is what already exists good enough? And so that the two parties can at least understand why we're spending the time on generating something net new. You mentioned about the communications, taking that time to explain, hey, I know this thing's coming in the future. I want to give you the heads up. Here's what I know about it. So that, like you said, David, they're better equipped to account for it because there's that proactive nature that's coming into the business. So breaking down some of those silos can certainly create a lot of value. I think one of the other areas between the two that, you know, sometimes it can seem like, well, that's more glorious or this is more glorious and we're doing the hard work over here. Internal controls is often, I think, a hidden gem within the organization that can often be underappreciated for the value it actually drives operationally for the business and how it can, it's not just a to-do we're doing in finance, but it's actually something, if you do it right, people can actually start to see how it's helping the business, helping them do their jobs, not just, oh, I'm going to be in the way of you being able to issue that purchase order or you being able to issue that contract and do whatever you want. We actually can help enable for scale if we do it right. But it's, I think sometimes too, it's just connecting those dots and breaking down what otherwise can be friction within the org.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Think about the idea of issuing a purchase order. So many companies that don't have controls in place or established guidelines, people flounder trying to get things done. People, I believe individuals are good, right? And want to do the right thing, but they don't know, who do I have to go to for this approval? What terms should or shouldn't be in a vendor agreement? If you take the time to establish those controls, to establish an A&A policy, approvals and authorities matrix to say, the following people need to approve and sign off. Here's the levels at which you can transact at or not transact at. Here are the types of terms and conditions that can and cannot be baked into contracts, sort of like go, no-go type zones. And then, you know, if you encounter this sort of clause, what's your fallback provision that you're going to go and try to renegotiate and get into a contract? At first, these things are viewed as guidelines and rules within an organization until somebody realizes all of the friction and ambiguity that existed previously has been removed. Now it's an accelerant towards growth and moving faster. I think it's all in how we shape what these controls are going to do within the organization, how we communicate it to the org, and how we ultimately share like what's in it for them.
I would even say even more basic internal controls is also preventing fraud. And that's very important to any organization. And there's scams out there and you have to be aware of them, right? And that's one basic function of the accounting department is to prevent fraud. There's those, all those checks and balances that have to be done to make sure that the rules, the authorizations are done and done properly. And that's to prevent fraud.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
All those checks and balances that have to be done to make sure that the rules, the authorizations are done and done properly. And that's to prevent fraud.
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, some of the silos or misunderstandings that can come in. What has been some of your prior experiences in helping to break some of those down and create a better working relationship? Start with you, Tom.
I'll pick activities that we've sort of undertaken on the FP&A side and accounting side separately. And so show how each part of the organization can show up. And so from an FP&A perspective, I've observed sometimes a forecast or a budget can get prepared within an organization, and then an FP&A team can send it out to the rest of the org. So it probably goes out to the sales leader and the marketing leader and the development teams and all the other folks. And often they don't take the time to walk the controllership and accounting team through, this is the plan. Here's the thought process that we went through in predicating and building out this plan. Here were our set of assumptions. Did you know this was our set of assumptions? And so while it seems so basic in nature, through them undertaking that activity, not just sharing what does the annual plan look like, but also as we reforecast and we formulate our rolling forecast, what's changed? Why did you change those assumptions? What happened within the organization? You inform the controllership team of what's happening. And so that knowledge helps them to, again, get better assurance over the figures. It allows them to feel more connected to the organization because they inherently know what's happening. You don't have to invite five people to a meeting if one person is grabbing that knowledge and then appropriately disseminating and communicating that information. On the other side of the table, I've often had accounting and controllership teams do a month-end walkthrough. What happened this month? Account by account, department by department, entity by entity, so that that feedback loop isn't missing. And as we talked about before, financial planning and analysis, you very much need that grounding or that history in order to plan for the future. And if you're missing some of that grounding or that understanding of what happened in a particular period, that's a lost opportunity. So having the controllership team convey and do a walkthrough of what happened that month not only shares information and knowledge, but it's also a trigger that as you're doing so, if the FP&A team thinks or believes there's something missing, you have another thread to pull and another opportunity to enhance or improve the process.
Having those team meetings together, sort of those accounting roles and those financial planning roles together, and having those financial reporting teams sort of report as a group. And so some issues can come out of that. And so accounting sort of becomes aware of those roles and those issues. And so they can anticipate when those transactions come through to them, right?
And what does that look like, David? Is that mostly the month-end close meeting or are there other key meetings you've put in place?
It tends to be in the second half of the month, just routine monthly team meetings, right? Don't make it special. Don't do it at month-end close. No, accountants went like that. They want a breather. So you do it towards the end of the month. And just, it's a wrap-up, you know, a wrap-up. If any issues came up, talk about it.
What do you think are some of the misconceptions that accounting has about the FP&A world? Start with you, David.
I think one thing I've found is materiality. So an accountant would look at a transaction and a $10,000 error and they would freak out. Whereas financial planning is like, whatever, you know, it's not that important. In the big picture, it's not that important. But to an accountant, that $10,000 error is big, right? And I think, let's say financial reporting or financial planning has a report and there is an error in it, it's not important. It doesn't change the decision. But an accountant would say, oh, that's a terrible mistake, you know? And it's really, it's on the big picture, it's not that important. So I think sort of that tension and sort of misconception is materiality. What is the size of an error? Because financial planning, it really is, it's guesstimates, it's estimates. It's just, you know, you're trying to plan something. It doesn't have to be incredibly accurate. Whereas accountants, it needs to be very accurate, right?
And it's interesting, as you're saying that, it's also making me think, because of that need for accuracy, sometimes FP&A might want you to reopen the books for something because, oh, this report, it looks like we were off, but I actually budgeted okay, we did this, without realizing the potential implications of reopening for something that small. So that was a great one to point out. Thank you. Tom, what about you?
I think sometimes there's the feeling out of a controllership team that everything that FP&A does is rainbows and sunshine. Yes, all of those things are true. You're forecasting the future, you're planning, you're partnering with the business, but that doesn't come without its own set of challenges. And again, this goes back to that like concept of appreciation for each other's roles. And I think that can be, while I'm like exceptionally passionate about FP&A, it's not necessarily an easy role. Like, I mean, you think about the fact that you are the person on the forefront of establishing a budget, a forecast for the entire org, in which you have to take all of those intersection points of all of that information and be publicly correct or incorrect about all of your assumptions that play such an integral role within the organization. So it's exciting, it's exhilarating, it's not easy, it is hard work, and you are going to have public failures on a regular recurring basis. And so while it comes with all of these parts that are exciting and glorious, there's pros and cons, and a lot of those activities might not even be of your undertaking within the organization. And so when you're right, it's great, and nobody says like, awesome job with the forecast. It's sort of like an assumption that it's correct. And when you're wrong, you're left answering for all of the activities that went on within the entire organization, which can be a hot seat to sit in.
The strategic decisions, because often there's limited resources and you have to make an analysis and choose priorities. And there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. So you could have some happy people and you can have some very unhappy people with your analysis and your recommendations. And that makes it tough.
Great insights. Thanks both. And now let's flip the table here and say, what do we think are some of the misconceptions FP&A has about accounting?
I think FP&A can think it's easy. You know, why are we not capturing transactions? I think FP&A can ask questions, David, you asked about like enhancing information, whether it's another field or a tag. You're left asking this question like, well, why can't we capture this? Like, what would it take? And it's really easy to ask for these things from the cheap seats until you understand how would a process need to change in order to capture this? How much training would be involved? How much enablement? What does it mean to the person sitting on the other side of the table? And again, I'm going to just keep going back to this concept of like lack of appreciation and understanding for another person's role. And so the more each part of the organization seeks to understand the challenges or what somebody else is facing, I think the better it becomes. But it's so easy to like, you lob that request in there and you say, like, just like grab this for me. And that poor person who's working exceptionally hard on the other side of the table is left reeling, thinking, I might be at capacity already. How am I going to tackle this, right?
I also think that FP&A doesn't realize accounting have choices sometimes when they do their debits and credits. And then there are times when they don't have choices. There are accounting rules. And it's like something has to be done as a capital asset as opposed to an expense. FP&A might want it an expense, but the accounting rule says, no, it's in a capital asset, right? And so there's sort of sometimes lack of appreciation of what the accounting rules are, because in FP&A, there is no rules. You know, you want to be correct and trying to get the best analysis done, but there aren't any rules. Whereas in the accounting world, oh yeah, debits and credits, if they have to be recorded in a certain way, they have to be recorded in a certain way, right?
David, maybe I can pull on that a bit. I think for those that are in an FP&A role, I think it is incumbent on us to get at least to the point that we're dangerous in terms of accounting standards, and that our forecasts shouldn't be, you know, sometimes they are, but they should not be predicated on no rules. If there's going to be accounting treatment, like, we should inherently seek to understand RevRec, capitalization of assets, when something's expensed, when it can't be expensed, when are we going to defer something, when are we not?
Especially on revenues, right? Deferred revenues, right?
Absolutely. If we don't do those things, our work is going to be a suboptimal work product. And that's a real shame, because all it would take would be sitting with your controller, sitting with your accounting team, and saying, here are my assumptions, here's how I plan something. What am I missing here? Am I missing any accounting standards that you think I should be capturing here? When you do your monthly actuals versus budget or actuals versus forecast, these things should be screaming out on the page at you to say, like, gee, that's a massive miss. I need to improve my process here. And so while we're never going to be experts in all things, like, that's not the reality of people in general. We don't have the bandwidth. And you want to be able to rely upon the expertise and the training and background of those people that are specialists. I think we have to be informed enough that we're not missing the big picture. And, you know, so it's probably a general appeal. If you're in FP&A and you don't know anything about accounting, go pick up some knowledge, like, go do some training, whether it's in-house, out-of-house. That's only going to make you a better practitioner in that role.
Just ask the controller, right?
Ask the controller. Like, that is a form of training, the knowledge and the skill set of the person, you know, your counterpart sitting in the seat next to you.
Yeah, and I love how you mentioned that. Ask them, because sometimes a new thing's coming up, you know it's coming. And if you're not really sure, go and get that in front of the accounting group so that they can take the time.
That's part of the collaboration between the two teams, right?
Yeah.
Just ask questions.
Absolutely. David, you've sat in the controller seat before, and curious now, knowing what you know now, is there anything that you wish you'd known sooner that you'd want the controllers that are in the audience listening to this episode to know?
Always remember the foundational base. You got to get that correct. You want to do some of the interesting stuff, but make sure the base is done correctly. Attention to detail. You need to review the transactions and the work that's being done. You got to pay attention to the details. That is so important. And once you have that base done, then you can start doing other interesting stuff, right? Some of the, you can help out the FP&A team with analysis, right? You can look at it from an organizational standpoint, and you can point things out for people.
And similar question for you, Tom. What are some things that you've learned along the way that you wish you could have gone back and told your younger FP&A self?
Oh, partner with the controller team. think about just something as simple as, like, you're forecasting a balance sheet. Don't go out there and just, like, slap on a DSO metric on your collections. Go interact with your AR team. Go have a conversation about them. Talk to them about velocity, what they've seen from a history perspective. Seek to understand, are those dynamics going to change? They are your best source of truth. We've talked lots about technical accounting and controllership, but, like, think about your AR team. They are that best source of your assumptions. Don't do it in a silo. What a waste and what a squandered opportunity to actually go to the expert in that area of subject matter and gather their insights and grab their assumptions versus doing it yourself.
They have the history. They have the experience. Their instincts, they can tell you what's going to happen next, right? Yes.
Thank you so much, both of you. It's been such a great conversation. Really appreciate all your insights. Now, David, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. And I'm going to do something a little different today. Tom, you used to be co-host with me on the show. Would you like to ask David the rapid fire questions?
I'd love to, David. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So the first question is, what is the best piece of business or professional advice you've ever received?
I think you need to work on people's strengths, right? Build up people's strengths. You're not going to change people to be something that they're not. So support and build people's strengths within your team, build their strengths and try to minimize the weaknesses. I think that's excellent advice there.
Awesome. Great advice. Fantastic to hear. Anything that focuses on building out a team well and supporting and enabling a team. And the second question, what is the most impactful business book you've ever read?
Business book. Oh, I'm not sure about business book, but when I was younger, I think Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance was impactful. Now, I am older now, and so I'm much less philosophical musing. I think books are very personal, and so whether an impact is there or not is personal. For me, The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin, I'm doing my own personal happiness project, and so that was impactful for me.
Amazing.
Thank you both for being on the show today. Really appreciate having you here.
Thanks for having us, Melissa. Great to be here.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about today's episode, please see the links in the show notes. And if you like what you heard, please leave a review on any of the streaming platforms. It helps other listeners to find the show, and we always love to hear from you. Subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcasts. You don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm your host, Melissa Howitson. Until next time.